This is the IBJ podcast for the week of March the 8th, 2021. I'm Mason King.
Yeah, I was just bawling. My heart was racing. I was like, I have a mortgage to pay. I've got, you know, a car. I mean, just like everybody else, you know, they have all their bills they need to pay. And I lost it.
I think everybody had heard the word furlough before, but no one really knew what it meant, right? And so we were very, very unsure, and nobody really knew, you know, even HR, I don't think really had all the answers, right? Because like I said, everything was just coming so fast.
The vaccine is coming, and I have a lot of hope and excitement around that.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. I'm going to introduce you to our guests this week in a minute, but want to quickly acknowledge an anniversary. Nearly 1 year ago, on March 11th, 2020, the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a global pandemic. Now, obviously, you don't need me to tell you that. You were there. I was there. We've been on this journey together, and hopefully at least some of the last 52 episodes of the IBJ podcast have been helpful to you in some way, because most of them have been about the pandemic and how it has affected the residents and businesses of Central Indiana. Now, we're all familiar with the grim toll that the pandemic has taken on Indiana and the rest of the world. I'm going to choose to quickly highlight a couple things I was thinking while in line last Friday to get my first dose of vaccine. First, I think it's astonishing that 1 year after we were bowled over by this virus, drug companies have developed and the United States has approved 3 vaccines. And as of Saturday, more than 85 million doses had been administered in the United States. And that's just in the last 3 months. And the pace is accelerating rapidly. Second, the hospitality industry in Indianapolis was decimated practically overnight last March. And today, we're preparing to host the biggest sporting event in America, the entire NCAA men's basketball tournament. This is an astonishing thing. But yes, the pandemic demands a retrospective on its 1 year anniversary. The editors at IBJ thought we should let Hoosiers tell their own stories. In the latest issue, we have profiles of 11 people who have struggled to come to grips with fear, and change, and loss during the crisis, and now are charting a way forward. For the podcast this week, I wanted to highlight the stories of 3 women within that group whose experiences specifically with work and their careers have common threads. Each encountered challenges far beyond the general baseline of being asked to work remotely and have spent the year in roiling tumult. 2 of them, in fact, lost their jobs, the jobs they had a year ago, and a third battled intense stress and anxiety in a job that requires her to be a representative of a multinational company. For this week's podcast, we've been able to bring them together to share their experiences, the lessons learned, and their comeback stories. Our guests are Andrea Hayden, Kelly Tingle, and Lizette Voloshek. Here's our conversation. Okay, everybody, I'm pleased to welcome you to the IBJ podcast. Episode number 142, which is about 52 episodes since the pandemic started. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us today. Now, usually at the beginning of each interview or each podcast, I like to introduce the guests, but I want to do it a little bit differently today. I'd like to have you introduce yourselves. So please state your name, what you were doing in your work career in March 2020, and then briefly what you are doing now. And Kelly, I'm going to want you to be third because you're still with the same employer, but your job gave you a really unique perspective a year ago on what was about to happen. Let's start with Andrea.
I'm Andrea Hayden. And in March of 2020, I was a design strategist at Ratio Architects. Currently, I am the owner of my own art and design company called Studio Hayden.
Lizette, who are you? What did you do? And what do you do?
Yes. So I'm Lizette Voloshek. And back last year about this time, I was the assistant director of event planning at the JW Marriott. And currently I am an account manager for Shorts Travel Management. So flipping the side of the coin there.
And let's move to Kelly. What were you doing in March 2020? Is that essentially what you were still doing today?
My name is Kelly Tingle, and yes, you are correct. I remain a manager of executive communications at Cummins, which is a global manufacturer headquartered in Columbus.
And as I said, you had a unique perspective on this because in your job, you were tracking the pandemic's impact in China and other parts of the world.
Yeah, that's correct.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I work in internal communications at Cummins, working to get information to all 62,000 of our employees around the globe. We have a very large presence around the Wuhan area. So obviously, when the pandemic began there in January and February, we had a unique glimpse, if you will, as to understanding and tracking and really diving deep into the impacts that the pandemic could have on our colleagues, as well as the work that we do.
So you might've had a greater insight into the sort of sense of impending doom, if you will, of what was heading for us before the rest of us did.
Sometimes I feel like that. Yes. I don't think anyone, even our colleagues and friends in China had a true understanding of the way this would work out. No one had a crystal ball, but it certainly added a layer of anxiety to this for me personally.
You said you were in the hospitality industry in early March. Did you have any sense, or did your company have any sense of how this pandemic would affect the industry or just the hotel in general?
You know, I think it just, like in so many different sectors, you know, in the country and the world, I think it just happened so fast. You know, we went from, you know, hearing things, you know, early on in the year, but again, it was, that was so far away from us, you know, in China, and that's not affecting the United States. And then just hearing again, bits and pieces, and then really kind of March hit, and all of a sudden our phones started ringing with groups canceling. And by, you know, the second week in March, we were decimated, basically, you know, and then by the third week in March, we were closing down. It was like in a blink of an eye, it kind of all happened. You know, it went from, oh, we have one group canceling, you know, we'll work through that, to then our phones ringing off the hook.
And Andrea, what about you? I'm sure you were listening to the same news that we are all listening to. Did you have a sense, though, that your employer could be affected by this, or that your job could be in danger?
A little bit, not at the time necessarily. Let's just say it definitely kind of came as a shock once we kind of had to start closing down. It was probably about St. Patrick's Day when I started to kind of feel uncomfortable. I had just gotten over the flu personally without knowing what it actually was. I don't think it was coronavirus, but I remember just kind of going to my supervisor and saying, hey, I want to work from home until we figure out what's going on. And then it was probably about a week later that our firm had kind of just said, hey, everybody, you know, needs to just go, you know, work from home. But I wasn't sure at the time. I was very naive.
Let's go a little bit deeper into your story. Can you tell us about the day that you learned that you no longer had a job?
Oh, it was the worst. It was the worst day. I had been working since 5:30 a.m. that day. I literally had no clue. I got an email at 10:01 with a letter and I had a meeting 20 minutes later via Zoom, and I was just bawling my eyes out. I was totally devastated. Had a meeting with HR and the owner of Ratio, and very, you know, very sweet, very kind words. You could tell it was a very difficult decision, and I ultimately couldn't be mad. You know, I was like, well, it's a tough time for everybody. And it, yeah, I was just bawling. My heart was racing. I was like, I have a mortgage to pay. I've got, you know, a car. I mean, just like everybody else, you know, they have all their bills they need to pay. And I lost it.
Did you initially look for a conventional job, or were you set from the beginning at taking the plunge and starting your own business?
Yeah, I freaked out and I was like, I need to find a job right now, you know, like everybody else when you got laid off. And, you know, nobody was hiring. So I did apply at a few different places like Lilly, IU Health. A lot of them were only hiring entry level, not somebody who has over 10 years of experience. So nobody was even looking at my resume. And at that point, you know, I'd had a few people already kind of reach out, another local architecture firm, which was great. I ended up working with them for a little bit, but yeah, it wasn't until after I actually kind of worked that contract job with this other architecture firm that I was like, I need to do this. This is my calling, is art. You know, I kind of got into it, back into it during the pandemic. I was like, this is where I need to, this is just where I need to be. I need to give it a shot.
Did you, in the meantime, did you apply for unemployment?
Yep, I applied for that when I was eligible.
And how do you get the confidence to launch your own company in the middle of an economic crisis?
It was terrifying. I think I just kind of looked at it, and actually, I'm not going to lie, like Bill Brown from Ratio, he's amazing. You know, again, I'm was very upset that I lost my job, but he gave me some very wise words of encouragement. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, the worst you can do is look for a job. But, you know, I started this company when I was 26 years old. And, you know, it's just that kind of gave me that boosted confidence and like, yeah, okay. Cause Reishi was such a great company and really enjoyed working there. And so I knew like having that kind of extra boost and obviously from my friends and my family and just again, hey, you know what? I think literally this is my calling. Maybe this is the time to do this. I went to Heron to do fine arts, do painting. Ended up in design, kind of pushed that part of me away for a while because I felt like that's what I needed to do to make money. It's just, this whole last year totally did a whole like 180 on me. I'm just learning to live off half my salary, which is insane, but I love it. And it's absolutely, it's like just totally changed my life.
So you were making, tell me if I'm wrong, about 50,000 a ratio. And that, how do you make do on 25?
Well, a lot of it actually, I feel like, was I'm a social person. I like going out and I like drinking and, you know, going to shows. And so honestly, a lot of that's what it was. I've always been a pretty frugal person, you know, and when you're at a firm like that, you know, you have all, like a lot of that money goes towards benefits a little bit. So I kind of just did the math and I was like, okay, this is what I need to make a month to survive. So a lot of it, you know, again, was going out. And so during the pandemic, I actually didn't feel as bad because nobody else was going out. So that really helped me save up some money.
Do you have health insurance?
I am looking today because I'm going to start longboarding, and which is kind of like skateboarding. And that's how pushing to finally get it. Fact that they reopened the, you know, marketplace. So it's actually way more affordable now. I went shopping for it in the fall before the open enrollment closed. And it was just, I couldn't afford it.
I want to move back to Kelly. Now, you mentioned before, although you kept your job, the pandemic occupied a huge amount of emotional space for you. I mean, from the very beginning, you had very intense anxiety. How did that manifest for you on day to day?
I did take it day to day, and I think that's what got me through. I think I was more anxious around my home. I was maybe more short with the people I cared about, which was frustrating. You know, I would talk a lot about giving grace, and that was a phrase I used often, and I was trying to make sure, especially that I allowed myself to give grace to myself. But it was hard. It was hard to be the kind of person I wanted to be for everybody because I love my job. I love my family. And I really wanted to be able to keep my family safe and to be able to perform a job, to make sure that my daughter was getting an education and to really be able to do all the things. But it was very difficult. And I lost sleep. I cried a lot, was just angry and bitter for no reason. And it wasn't fair. Luckily, I was able to increase my anti-anxiety medication. I was able to go to talk therapy and all of that helped. Again, because I have a great workplace and a great family, was able to feel supported and come out the other side hopeful.
So on March 13th, I think it was, Cummins sent staff home to work remotely. And did that help your anxiety to be at home, or did that actually intensify it to be at home?
It intensified it. Yeah. I'm not great with technology. So working from home, having to operate all of that. And then of course, having my daughter at home as well at that time, it was, you know, just a few weeks later when IPS decided to keep kiddos at home and learn from home. So it certainly increased my anxiety. It was also such a time of unknown. I mean, none of us knew where this was going. I remember I felt like a rebel just, you know, walking around the block at home, So it was really intense at that time. And working with global colleagues where they had different regulations in place and different stipulations, knowing how tight some of the lockdowns were in other locations, had me scared as well.
Were you set up at home for remote work?
No. My friends often joked that when they would come to my home, it was like going into a pioneer village. They confused my television for my computer screen because I have a very small television. I didn't have internet, actually.
You're so kidding.
No, what? Which is hilarious because I work from home all the time, but I would just use a hotspot and work around it.
You work for Cummins.
No big deal. Yeah, but why would I need it if I had a hotspot? It was fine. It was fine. I worked from home all the time. It was fine. But an increase in usage, obviously, a need for stable connection so we could Zoom. And then, you know, having an extra kiddo on the internet space all the time. Yeah. So yes, I work for Cummins. Not only that, I work for our chief technical officer. And I myself am a technical nightmare. So yeah. For several months, I had our mousetrap game set up as my booster for my laptop computer. That was really chic for sure. I didn't have a proper desk for my daughter. I didn't have a workspace for myself. So I'm a person that loved going into the office. I loved going down to Columbus to see my people. So I didn't have that need. I live in an adorable little bungalow. Yeah. So here I am in my bedroom taking Zoom calls.
I want to just inject something real quick about anxiety from my own experience. When you say to people that you're struggling with anxiety, when it comes out of your mouth or it comes out of my mouth, it sounds like I'm saying, I'm really extremely worried and I'm just bothered by that. But what actually is happening on the inside is that I'm experiencing every worst case scenario that I can imagine in real time. And it is completely debilitating. And what's worse is that when I look out at other people, they appear to be fine and they're not experiencing the apocalypse. And I find that in a way it alienates me from other people. And for somebody who is an extrovert like you, I would assume that might be even worse.
It's really difficult. And my job in communications is to communicate with people and make sure that our employees feel safe and informed. So I was trying to be an extra source of knowledge. And I was trying to make sure that, you know, again, worst case scenario, I had to figure it all out. Like, what would happen if this, so that we could be ready and have the knowledge and information that we need moving forward. So I was, even at work, I couldn't get away from this because I was diving deeper into it. So no break.
Was there a point at which you really felt like things were getting better for you?
Yes.
Not yet.
We're getting there. I think, I think, to be honest too, it's not just been a year of a pandemic. It's also been a year of challenges around racial injustice that threw me for a loop this summer. And you know, then it was, you know, some unfortunate political discourse that really got me thinking about some things. So I feel like it's also compounded by other events that continued to make things difficult to process. But I do think, honestly, the past few weeks have been really nice here in Indianapolis. We've had the sunshine, the vaccine is coming, and I have a lot of hope and excitement around that.
So I want to turn to Lizette and add a little bit of context to your experience. Now, you also have kids at home that needed to be guided through remote learning. How old are your kids?
6 and 8. I have 2 boys. So... So March 20th it's so funny how all these dates, obviously for all of us, I feel like are ingrained in our memories forever. March 20th, it was also a Friday. We, you know, were told, and I'm sorry, I'm getting so emotional listening to you guys. And it's just bringing back a lot of feelings. But yeah, so we were all told by our team that we were all going to be put on furlough. We didn't really know what that meant. You know, we're all kind of just figuring out what that really meant. You know, do we have insurance still? I think back and we're like, oh, these are so trivial, but things like our cell phones, you know, I had a work cell phone for 16 years. I'm like, do I have this when I walk out the door? Because otherwise I don't know how to communicate to people. You know, what about my work computer? you know, I feel like a lot of people were also in the same situation where you didn't really have your own personal computers anymore because you've been using your work computer for so long. You know, all these like questions that we had, because nobody really, I think everybody had heard the word furlough before, but no one really knew what it meant, right? And so we were very, very unsure, and nobody really knew, you know, even HR, I don't think really had all the answers, right? Because like I said, everything was just coming so fast. Gosh, I'm trying to remember, but I want to say it was right around that same time that all the schools were going virtual, you know, and so then figuring out also what the heck is happening with my kids. We're in Clark Pleasant School Districts where we live. I'm on the south side in Greenwood. K through fourth grade didn't have Chromebooks. Fifth through 12th grade in our school district did. So, you know, the big question was, okay, well, what are these K through fourth graders going to do? You know, and what does that curriculum look like? And obviously the schools were just racing to get things put together and available. So they kind of did, you know, and I know this is a cliche word at this point, but like a hybrid kind of thing where they had things, videos available, you know, if you had access to internet, but then they also sent home a whole bunch of actual like printed packets for the kids that we were, you know, doing X number of pages per day. But then it's like, okay, well, what else do you do with your children all day, right? You know, luckily for me, I wasn't actually trying to do my job at the same time, but I had a lot of friends that were, and I was like, I don't know how you're doing it. You know, I'm trying to structure my kids' day, you know, and make it really structured. You know, Mason and I were chatting before you ladies got on that, you know, we did arts and crafts every day. You can see someone behind me. You know, every day we did our arts and crafts. Every day we would go out and do some sort of physical activity. You know, I was having all my friends and family send me ideas for different arts and crafts. And, you know, I would screenshot things when I would see them on social media, you know, figure out how to do them with my kids, you know, ordering supplies through Amazon, you know, all that kind of thing, just to keep some structure to their day. And for myself, honestly, just to stay sane myself. You know, I mean, this was the first time in 16 years that I wasn't working every day. And, you know, like you said, Kelly, going into the office, you know, I worked for the same company for my entire adult career, and I loved going to work. You know, I loved the people I worked for. I had my own team. We always kind of joked that I was the mom and my director was the dad, you know, and so they were all like, okay, go talk to mom and dad, you know. you know, so I mean, we were family, and to all of a sudden have to tell everybody, okay, you're going home. And again, you know, I had employees that live paycheck to paycheck. And so just, you know, knowing that and knowing what they were going through, you have that kind of like, oh, I shouldn't feel this way because I'm a little bit better off than they are. But it's definitely an emotional roller coaster for sure.
You know, for people who are listening who aren't from Indianapolis, I just want to make clear that the JW Marriott where you work is a unique hotel property. It is one of the most upscale, if not the most upscale hotel in the city. It is by far the largest with more than 1,000 rooms. It's also one of the newest. I mean, it is a huge piece of our skyline. Did you have a sense at the beginning that maybe the Marriott could just be able to soldier through this? Was it really kind of a shock that it would close?
Absolutely. I don't think any of us thought that was going to happen. And again, like I said, it's such a condensed time frame. I mean, everything kind of happened within a few weeks. It was like, you know, your thought process changed every single day with getting new information, you know, and at one point, okay, everyone's going to have to go to 4-day work weeks straight across the board. Everybody was going to get cut to 4 days a week, you know? And so then we're always, you know, obviously thinking, okay, how are we going to do this? Because in hospitality, we don't really work 40-hour work weeks, you know, it's definitely a 24-hour business. And yeah, I mean, we're a little over 1,000 hotel rooms, we're 100,000 square feet of meeting space. You know, we are busy every single day of the year. You know, we don't have a slow period. And so I don't think anyone envisioned it, you know, at the onset that we would close. And quite honestly, even when they said that, I think we were all just in shock that was actually going to happen.
And then the JW reopened on July 9th, I think. You saw that happening, but were you reinstated or did they say, no, you need to stay home?
No. So at that time when the hotel reopened, so my team was 10 managers and 10 support staff members. And when the hotel reopened, it opened with 3 managers and no support staff. And again, at that point, we were still on furlough. We weren't severed at that point because, again, there was definitely the hope that things are going to start turning around. But unfortunately, they finally made the decision that August 31st was my official severance and day that was when I was officially severed from the company.
So when did you decide it was time to look for a new job?
So I will say that I did not start looking at all, all during furlough, because again, I kind of held out that hope that, that I would be brought back. And also I think I didn't really want to look for another job. You know, I like the job I have. So really, even after I was laid off, I didn't start right away. At that point, the school year was just about to start for my kids. And at that point, they were going to be able to go back full time. But again, everything was so unsure that my husband and I agreed that if this is, let's hold off, because what if I did start a new job and, then I wasn't able to take care of my kids? How would that look like? You know, at that point, I wouldn't have wanted to necessarily send them to a daycare and then have daycare be in charge of their education. We kind of held off for a while just to see how everything was going to play out and how the schools were going to handle everything. Our school system has done an excellent job. And so my kids have been able to stay in school. So really, probably right around November is when I really started to kind of think about finding a new job. To be honest, part of that was creating a resume. I hadn't created a resume since college. I've held lots of different positions within White Lodging, but I was hired right out of college. I went to Michigan State University for hospitality business. And so I was hired right out of college and I moved down to Indiana. So my resume was awful. So I worked really hard on trying to put it together and got a lot of feedback from friends and former colleagues, and had sent it off to a few of my really good friends to look at. And they gave me amazing, amazing feedback, but it was so much feedback that I couldn't do it. Like, it kind of, Kelly, I feel like, you probably would understand this. Like, it was just too much. Like, so I literally didn't do it for like 2 weeks and just kind of put that aside. And so then when I finally picked it up again, I got it to a good point, felt like I had gotten a lot of good feedback and made changes. And so then finally started to actively look for a position, which was also brand new to do. So.
And you're working remotely now, is that right?
Yes. Yep.
How do you like working remotely after working in an office for so long?
So it's definitely different. I'd say I'm getting there with my office setup. Again, this was kind of our family office, if you will. So we have a desk, but, just getting like a second monitor, because just trying to use like one laptop screen isn't really the greatest. Just a lot of the pieces, like buying a keyboard, things that you take for granted when you're in an office. and then just trying to kind of set those boundaries with my kids because of my working from home now. We're not doing before and after care. The kids are just at home and they're old enough that obviously they can come home, have a snack, play a little bit, until mom's done with work kind of thing.
Well, I have some general questions I want to ask just about the last year, but first I just wanted to take a minute to open things up. If you guys have anything that you wanted to ask each other or anything you want to amplify or
work boundaries.
Yeah.
Boundaries in general. It's so hard. I mean, I don't have anybody that I live with besides my cat, Carl, and I just throw him aside when he's annoying. But like, boundaries within yourself is so hard. Like, working for yourself is so hard. So I don't even know like where to begin with that, but going from working 8 hours a day, roughly 40 hours a week, to now I'm working literally 7 days a week. I did the math the other day and I'm like doing about 80 to 85 hours a week.
Oh, wow.
It is insane, but it's not good. It's not healthy. And so that's something I'm really working on, is like work-life balance. And again, setting boundaries for myself. Like, one thing to set it with somebody else, but it's even harder to do it to yourself and hold yourself accountable.
Not to make this into a Hallmark movie, but can you point to a particular lesson, the most important thing maybe you've learned about yourself in the last year?
I've taken risks. I've been brave and taken risks. My house is no longer called the Pioneer House. Now I am advancing into the 21st century. I have learned more about technology and apps and, you know, really leveraging the tools that we have in that regard. So I feel like it's forced me to make change and be more comfortable with change and to realize that it's all going to be okay. We're all going to get there. If we have gotten through this as a global society, we can get through anything. So it's given me the comfort to know that no matter what the future holds, no matter what choice you make, if you're brave and able to take it, you're going to be okay.
What do you think, Andrea?
I'm really totally agree with what Kelly said. Sorry. It's like definitely taking risks that was huge for me this year or last year. Sorry. Also just being mindful and being kind to myself, because anybody else who's ever been laid off and never got their job back, it's like freaking sucks. You know, it's like so hard. I deal with imposter syndrome. I've always dealt with it. So just learning that, just to be nice and kinder to myself and realize that I'm doing the best that I can with what I have. And that's really all that I can do.
Yeah. What do you think, Lisa?
No. I mean, I would agree with obviously, you know, everything that you ladies said. You know, I think for me that it's okay not to be busy 100% of the time. I am definitely, you know, my parents have called me the tour director since my whole life, you know, like it's not a surprise that I was an event planner. And I have always planned things out, you know, and I think that's one of the struggles that I've had over the last year, that I haven't been able to plan everything out, that I've had to take day, you know, one day at a time kind of thing, but that it's okay to not be busy. It's okay to not have everything planned out, you know, and just enjoy, you know, really try to just enjoy this time. Right. And look at the positives. Even when you're sitting there crying, just try to look at the positives, you know, and that I have family and I have a house and I have people that care about me and that support me. I mean, my goodness, in the last year, I've read more books than I probably have in the last 10 years, right? That I haven't had time to read that have been just great. And they've been all sorts of different, you know, genres and everything. And in the beginning, I watched a lot of Christmas movies because I needed to just be surrounded by Hallmark, right? Like, and happy. So I'm pretty sure my husband thought I was crazy, but just really, you know, embracing this time and just finding the joy in it.
All right, I got to sign off. But again, thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Thanks, ladies.
Thanks.
Bye.
Take care.
My thanks again to our guests this week, Andrea Hayden, Kelly Tingle, and Lizette Voloshek. Again, you can read more about their stories in the latest print edition of IBJ. And while these three ladies represented a good range of experiences from the pandemic so far, we do have 11 profiles in this print package in all. You'll be able to read about the executive director of the Dayspring Center, who needed to find ways to house more than a dozen homeless families who otherwise would have stayed at the center shelter. You can read about the pulmonologist who works in the emergency room of IU Health's University Hospital, who needed to learn on the fly how to best keep her patients breathing while the medical community caught up with the virus. And we visit with the co-owner of the Fletcher Place restaurant, Bluebeard, about how the former hotspot has tried to continue operating while protecting the safety of its diners and staff. Of course, we're finally making progress against the pandemic, and Central Indiana's stint hosting March Madness could be an economic springboard for the area. However, also in this week's issue, Mickey Shuey explains why the tournament won't be a boon to the city in terms of corporate entertaining. And meanwhile, Kirk Christian details the plans for a youth sports project in Whitestown that could lead to a network of similar developments across the Midwest. Again, you can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say it's quite a bit easier to access all of the latest news and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information that you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbetter. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.